and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. Listeners, as you can imagine, after more than 260 interviews to this point and attendance at bookish events too numerous to count, I meet a lot of Australian authors. Some are well into their writing careers and others are just at the start or trying to break in, like me, while many are somewhere in the middle. So when someone I know, someone who's been trying to get published for a while, finally succeeds, it's an occasion well worth celebrating. My friend Joanne Spears works as an editor in her own business called Nurturing Words. And when she's not wrangling other people's manuscripts, Jo is writing her own. Her debut novel, Second Chance Love in Point Perry, was published by Harlequin's Escape Publishing earlier this year, and I couldn't be happier for Jo. A warm and tender story inspired by Jo's upbringing on the Eyre Peninsula of South Australia and grief over the death of her beloved mum, Second Chance Love in Point Perry ushers a bright and promising career and more Point Perry books, I hope, for this talented storyteller. And I'm delighted to welcome Jo to the podcast today. Hi, Jo.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for that wonderful intro as well. It was beautiful. Thank you for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, Jo, as mentioned, the very early seeds of inspiration for this novel came out of grief. I wondered if you could talk us through how you went from writing as therapy to getting a contract for this novel, because I think, as I mentioned before we started recording, I think your experience can serve as inspiration for many aspiring authors out there.
Yeah, well, it's been a long journey for me. So my mum passed away just over 9 years ago now. And before she passed away, we were talking about, we've got this recipe book, which is all handwritten recipes of my mum and my nana and my grandma. And we were talking about how I would go. I was quite a keen photographer back then and had a little photography business. And we were talking about how I would, you know, photograph the recipes and make a bit of a, you know, a book to, you know, so that it wasn't falling to pieces or anything like that. And to keep it as a bit of a family history as well. So that's what mum and I were talking about. Then unfortunately, you know, she passed away and I, you know, lost, I suppose, all my motivation for my photography and I fell into a bit of a dark hole myself. So away went the, you know, this recipe book that I was going to do. And as things got a bit darker for me, eventually I, you know, I came into a community of women and reconnected with some people from the Eyre Peninsula. And a couple of them actually said to me, Joe, just write and get the shit out of your head. So I had all this stuff and I, you know, when mum passed away, I was suddenly surrounded by men as well. You know, I've got two boys, I've got a husband. My mother-in-law had also passed away. So I was kind of, I suppose, lacking some real, you know, girly people that I could actually really talk to and those sorts of things to get out of my, you know, out of my sadness. So I started, I suppose, just jotting things down, just writing what was in my head. And you know, I started doing some blogging and things like that. And I set up a page called Emerging Chook, which was, you know, Chook is my nickname. And it was about me, I suppose, emerging from this darkness, you know, to try and make sense of the grief and what had happened and you know, hopefully to help other people that may be going through the same thing as well. So I started blogging and one thing led to another. And I just had this spark of an idea of, you know, what would I suppose I asked myself, what would I do if I lost my husband or my children or whatever, where would I go? What would I do? Would I fall in love again? And how would, you know, people react to that? And also at this time as well, I had found myself in this wonderful community of women who, you know, did actually really help me get through it. So that's where the seed started, I suppose, for Second Chance Love in Point Perry. And I, you know, just had this story and I couldn't get it out of my head and I could visualize the scenes and where I wanted to set it and those sorts of things. So I did just start writing it. But at that stage, I actually had no idea how to write. I'm not one of those that grew up as being, you know, wanting to be a writer since I was, you know, knee high to a grasshopper. You know, I loved reading. I love reading, you know, romance, Sweet Valley High, all those kinds of things as well. So I had to go through the process and of learning how to write this book. So I did so many online courses. I went to Writer's Essay. I had a course called The Manuscript Incubator, which was over the space of 12 months. Every month we would do like an in-house course on different parts of writing. So 1 month would be dialogue and then it'd be, you know, character and then it would be, you know, plot and that sort of thing. So over the course of that year, I kind of learned the mechanics, the craft, some of the basics of writing as well. And at the end of the year, you know, I had a draft. It was, I suppose, what they call the first shitty draft. But I also had the opportunity to have someone in the industry read the first chapter, and she saw something in that chapter and she kind of said to me, I think you need to keep going with this. You know, it's terrible writing, but, you know, there's something in there that wants me to, you know, read this story. If it wasn't for her, I probably would have kept going. And also through that process, I met the amazing Victoria Perman. She ran the, I think it was called Dynamic Dialogue, something like that. And in this particular course, I was 8 out of 12 people. I was the only romance writer. So Victoria kind of honed in on me. She's like, oh my God, there's a romance writer. And she really took me under her wing and said, you know, have you heard of Romance Writers of Australia? We have a local chapter here in Adelaide. We meet every month, you need to come along. So I went to my first meeting. I met all these wonderful other romance writers and I was like, oh, I really like this community. It's really great. And Victoria said to me at conference next year, you need to pitch this story. And because at that stage I was still doing the whole fangirling moment with Victoria, I'm like, yes, Victoria, yes, no worries. I'll absolutely pitch it. And in my brain, I'm going, oh my God, oh my God. But I did get it to the point where I could pitch it. And that was Sydney just over 5 years ago. So I pitched it at the Sydney conference, and my very first Romance Writers of Australia conference, my first pitch was to Harlequin. And to my absolute surprise, they were like, yes, can you send me the entire manuscript? And I was like, oh, okay. I did send it through, and it was still pretty messy. I think it was about 107,000 words or something like that. And yeah, and then it took ages and ages to hear back, 7 or 8 months or something. And eventually I got a response and it was like, it's great, we love it. I had some very specific feedback, which is really unusual. And I want listeners to know that it is really unusual to get specific feedback, because normally it's a yes or a no. But the person at Harlequin who read it actually kind of said to me, you know, can you delete some of these chapters? Can you nut out some of this, you know, these characters and storyline? Cut the word count down because it was way, way too long. And we would like to see it again. So at that stage, I still really didn't know what I was doing. And I was like, I don't know how to delete 30,000 words or what to do. So I got in touch with another amazing Australian author, Tess Wards, who at that stage, she had posted something on her social media about taking on manuscripts to edit. And I thought, amazing. I love Tess's stories. So I got in touch with her and she did a developmental or a structural edit for me, and it came back at 70,000 words. So she had gone through and chopped the 30,000 I need chopped, and gave me some amazing feedback. And from there, I then got a bit stuck because I didn't actually know what to do. So it then sat in my drawer or on my computer, I think, for about 3 years. Those couple of years, I did got my business up and running for my editing. And then it was only after the conference in Fremantle last year where I got inspired again. So I really must dig out my manuscript and fix it up and send it back. And I think because I had all this editing knowledge and experience behind me, obviously now with my business, I could pick it up and I actually knew what I needed to do with it. So I had some amazing beta readers that read it and came back to me as well. So with all that feedback, I rehashed it and submitted it again. I think it was November. And then I got an email from Harlequin in December saying that they had picked it up again. And they were still interested, and we emailed backwards and forwards, and it was Christmas, and then it was New Year, and, you know, I didn't really hear anything. And then it was actually on my birthday, so early February, when I got the email that came through from Harlequin offering me a contract with their Digital First, which is Escape Publishing, to publish it. I just cried. I was a blubbering mess with the whole, you know, reading the email as well. So in those 5 minutes, I've kind of summarised about 7 years' worth of work, from, you know, a seed of not even wanting to write or knowing what to write to getting a contract. And then Second Chance Loving Point Perry was then published 1st of September. It's just been a whirlwind of perseverance and determination. I think probably the two words that I say to a lot of people that, you know, ask me how the process was and what it was like getting from, you know, one end to the other.
Yeah, what a brilliant and fascinating story. And thank you for sharing that. And I really do believe that it does help aspiring authors out there to understand that not everybody gets that dream run of writing a book and then sending it out and getting it picked up. A lot of people do have this very convoluted journey of writing and sending it out and getting knocked back and getting asked to resubmit or not getting asked to resubmit, and then, you know, losing faith in the process or losing enthusiasm for your story even. Other things that you said that really resonated with me. Number one, Tess Wards is fantastic. I'm a huge fan of Tess's work. Her support of the Australian writing community is incredible. And two, just that what you just said there at the end, the tenacity and the perseverance that you really do need sometimes, well, not sometimes, all the time, that aspiring authors do need to get themselves over the line and have a publishing deal. So well done you. Yeah. So glad that you kept persisting, because this book is fantastic. And as you know, I was lucky enough to take away this book with me recently when I was overseas. And Jo, it was everything. It was everything I didn't know I needed at the time. It was a warm, tender, small town love story, which I thoroughly enjoyed. So what I wanted to ask you was, what's the feedback that you're getting? And is being a published author everything you imagined it would be?
I'll answer the first question first. So the feedback has been amazing. I've been absolutely blown away. You know, every day I get, you know, either a review or someone messages me or sends me an email. And that, and you know, it's just amazing. You know, they're saying that it's heartfelt. They're saying that they've needed the tissues. And like you, they're saying it was like the story that they didn't realize they actually needed to read. And it's been really interesting. You know, different people have come back and they say, oh, you know, I really love this character. I love this character and I love this scene. So it's just, for me, like, it's just heartwarming that people have really embraced the story, and being that, you know, the theme is obviously about grief as well. So, you know, I really had to try and balance the, you know, the sad with the happy and that sort of thing. And I was glad that that balance has come through as well. The reviews have been amazing. So I've just been thrilled with that. And, you know, at a time where it is sometimes hard, you know, as a published author, you don't get your sales figures every day or every week. Sometimes you really are just flying blind with what's happening with, you know, the numbers side of it. But when, you know, to get feedback and reviews and particularly for people who you don't even know, you know, people that are kind of outside of that friends and family circle, it's just amazing. And it really does make the hard work worth it as well. Now, the other question was about, has it been what I expected? No, and I'm more than happy to be quite vulnerable here as well. This industry isn't really, you know, it's not for the faint-hearted, and coming in as a debut author, you know, this is at my first book as well, you know, I haven't written anything else. So, you know, I know that I'm in the minority of people who, you know, pitch straight up and get a contract straight up. And I know that's, you know, it doesn't happen for a lot of people. But I did get a lot of rejections as well. You know, even though Harlequin was sitting on my manuscript, I was still pitching and submitting to all of the other publishing houses as well. And, you know, I got a lot of rejections and that sort of thing. So, you know, I felt that pain. I actually liken this process to getting married. I sent this out to my newsletter subscribers only last week. You get engaged and that's kind of like, that's the contract. It's like, you know, you've been, you know, wishing for so long that you'd have that happy moment of getting that commitment, getting the ring on your finger. And that's what the contract is like, you know, for 7 years I've been in love with this particular story, and eventually, you know, we're getting married. And then there's the time from, you know, your engagement to your wedding where it's, you know, it's the planning, it's the book cover, it's the editing, it's the going backwards and forwards and trying to work out where you fit into the writing community as a debut author and trying to reach out to people to market your book and trying to get organized. And there's the build up and there's the build up and there's the build up to the big day. And you know, you have a big release day. I had an amazing launch party that my local council, they held that for me. And, you know, I had 100 of my closest family and friends at that there as well. And that was like a wedding, you know, you don't really get to talk to everybody, but it was an amazing night. And we celebrated my journey and Victoria Perman once again was there and she did a Q&A for me. And I was really able to talk about the story and my upbringing in Woodner, which is, you know, where I came from, which is on the peninsula, and how, you know, all of those things came into the story. And after that, you know, you're in the honeymoon period, you know, you're on a high because you've been married, you've got a contract, your book's out in the world. And then about a week later, you come home from your honeymoon and you see this and you go, oh my God, what the hell am I going to do now? Like, I'm home and this is back to real life. And, you know, I've got a full-time editing business. And like I was saying to you before, you know, everyone then says to you, like, when's the next book coming out? And then all of a sudden for me, you know, I'm an empath, so I feel emotions a lot. I actually fell into a big hole. Like, I was kind of like, this isn't how this is supposed to be. I'm not supposed to feel like this. It's, you know, almost like the baby blues as well. The pressure of that, the pressure I was putting on myself as well, because, you know, I do have 3 more stories in the Point Perry series that I'm working on. So it was actually really hard. And then, you know, once I kind of came out of that and got myself back into a bit of a routine, it's been like a roller coaster ride, and I hate roller coasters. It's, you know, because you have one day where it's all great and things are going well, you get a great review, and then the next day it's kind of like, okay, I need to reach out to do some more marketing. I need to find someone to do a newsletter swap with, and, you know, can someone support me on a blog to try and get some more exposure? So, you know, for me as a debut author, I've got a very small readership. So it's about me having to try to get readers outside of my family and friends as well. So, and they're all things that I have to do off my own back, even though I'm with Harlequin. It's a digital release, so I don't get as much support as having a book release that goes into a bookstore, and I don't have that exposure. It's a digital book. So, you know, all of my marketing is all kind of stuff that I have to do off my own back as well. So there have been times where I've felt like I'm a self-publishing indie author, but I've got, you know, I've got Harlequin backing me, which is amazing. So I still have to do a lot of that marketing and trying to find the readers and promote myself as well. And that's hard, you know. It's hard for someone who is an introvert to go out, you know, to your library and say, hey, I'm Jo Spears, I'm an author, I'm local, can I come and chat? That's really hard for me. I think it's hard for a lot of authors because we tend to love sitting at our desks and writing the stories and being creative and not actually putting ourselves out in front of people. So that's been really hard as well. You know, kudos to authors who work full-time and write as well. It's hard to balance, and I think someone said to me it's more of an integration, like, you know, it's integrating two businesses and a life into one and trying to fumble my way through at the moment. Has it been everything I expected? Absolutely not. There's been things that have been amazing that I didn't think I would feel. There were things that I thought would happen that didn't. You really have to take things as they come at the moment, but it's interesting, and it's because I work with self-publishing authors with my editing business. So I kind of see that side of it as well, and see what, you know, a lot of indie authors go through. And to me, to kind of be on the other side, it's been a really interesting comparison of things that are different, but things that are also very much the same, things that we do the same. And I suppose for all of us, it's about building our readership and getting readers. At the end of the day, that's what we want. We want people to read our books.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Jo. I've spoken to authors, as I mentioned to you earlier before we started recording, that a lot of people do think that once they have the contract, they're home and host. But for many, it's just the start of a journey that just keeps growing in difficulty and scale.
A lot of author friends that I've been able to confide these things in as well, the most common thing that's come out of it is, you know, it's the long game. It's a long game of building a newsletter list. It's a long game of building readers. We can be impatient as well because, you know, we see some of these TikTok sensations and they have one book and all of a sudden it's a TikTok sensation and they're getting millions of downloads and then they get the movie. You kind of think, wow, this no name is all of a sudden famous. So it's really about, you know, you've got to be in it for the long game. And I think once I got my head around that, that kind of took a lot of pressure off me as well because I was trying to do everything all at once. I need to pace myself and it will come. Like I said, it's not for the faint-hearted and it's not for people who are massively impatient. It's a slow burn, like a slow burning romance.
Yeah, so very true. You're talking to the queen of impatience here. So I totally understand.
So I'm impatient now, but like it took me 7 years to like get it. 3 years that I sat on my laptop, I didn't look at it. Obviously I wasn't quite so impatient then, but you know, once it kind of happens, like, okay, I'm impatient, you know, now. It's an interesting mindset.
Okay, Jo, so for listeners out there who haven't had the pleasure of reading your book as I have, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the story.
The story is about Tom and Erin, and Erin is deep in guilt and grief. She's had a massive tragedy happen in her life, and she finds herself pretty much at the bottom of the barrel. She lives in Adelaide. She is all by herself, and she just gets to the point where she's at her lowest depth and she goes, I just can't do this anymore. I need to get out of Adelaide. I need to go away. I need to go back home, which is Point Perry. So she literally just chucks a few things in the car and drives Adelaide to Point Perry, which is over on the west coast of the Eyre Peninsula. It's about a 7 or 8 hour drive. So she drives back hoping that when she gets to Point Perry, those things of her childhood and returning home will actually help give her some peace and give some clarity and help her recharge and look after herself and for her to really just try to find her feet and how she's going to move forward with her life. But like, you know, most romances, she gets back to Point Perry and she meets Tom, who is a single dad, and he's got an adorable little boy called Carter. Tom also, you know, he's a local school teacher. He's a footy player. He's a musician. He's well-loved in, you know, in Point Perry. He's well-known. as is his mum and dad. He loves his mum. He has a bit of drama with his dad. He has some long-held gripes, or grievances, I should say, with his dad. So they obviously meet in Port Perry, and then, without giving too many spoilers away, is they obviously meet and there's a connection there. But Tom's also, you know, coming out of a bit of a traumatic marriage breakdown as well. So they're both lost souls, basically. You know, there is an immediate connection there. And like I said at the start as well, I really wanted to explore people who have broken hearts and they find love again and find hope, you know, how they deal with it, how the community deals with it. And it's just this wonderful story of how these two really find each other and they help each other through some emotional times. And then Tom's ex-wife, Hannah, actually returns back to town. She's a Hollywood starlet. So she's come back to Point Perry for her movie premiere, which throws the whole town into a bit of a spin, because it's a pretty big thing to have a big movie star returning home. And, you know, they have to clean the town hall and do all those things that happen in small country towns. A lot of them are torn because, you know, having this event is amazing for the community, but a lot of them will also forget of the drama and the trauma of you know, Hannah and Tom's breakup 5 years ago as well. So she comes back to town saying that she's coming back to, you know, thank the town for her upbringing and that sort of thing. She has a bit of an ulterior motive as well, which gets a bit nasty and really causes some trouble with Erin and Tom as well. You know, her and Erin have some past as well. So for me, I really wanted to try to encompass the community feel that I got of the community of women that helped me through my grief and going back home. You know, it's about community, and I really wanted people to read it and have hope, you know, get to the end and kind of go, you know, I've been in this situation and perhaps I need to find a community and there is hope for me. And it's a story of broken hearts and you know, really how they learn to live and love again. I'm a very emotional writer as well. So I really wanted to delve deep into the emotions of how they would feel interacting with each other when they are being through these emotional, you know, turmoils in their lives, and how they actually come together and can really help each other through some tough times as well.
It was a truly beautiful story, and I really enjoyed their individual journeys, but also their journey together. I thought that was wonderful. Point Perry, as you may have mentioned, is a fictional town, but it's inspired by the place that you grew up in. So I wanted to know, what is it about this place that made you want to set the story there?
It is a fictional town, Point Perry, which is over on the west coast of Eyre Peninsula. It's actually based on a little seaside town called Venus Bay. So I grew up in a place called Woodna, which is a big farming and rural community, like right in the middle of the Eyre Peninsula, a population about 600. So I was born there, did all my schooling there. It still has a massive part in my little heart. Every summer and all our holidays, we would go to this little place called Venus Bay, which is about an hour's drive. I just have like the most amazing memories of being in Venus Bay, particularly as I got, you know, into my teenage years. Every summer, you know, we would meet boys and hang out and have bonfires on the beach and go out to the back beach and go surfing. And like, I just had the most amazing memories there. And, you know, we had a shack there as well. And it's just one of those places where I just keep remembering of what a great place it is. And, you know, memories of my mum as well. I wanted to set it there because it just had such a special place in my heart. But population of Venus Bay, I think, is about 20. So it doesn't have much more than a shack and a general store and a caravan park. So I've actually mashed Woodna and Venus Bay together. So Venus Bay now has, you know, it has a school and has a hospital and it has Marge's Cafe, has the nursing home and, you know, the business district. So I've kind of made it a bit bigger, which is what I needed to obviously have a bigger population as well. And you know, to have all those services, those amazing services that are in rural towns as well. So that's where the Point Perry came from. And I called it Point Perry because it's actually a point. So you've got the bay, which is all very calm. And then you go out through the entrance and there's a point, and then out the back is the wild oceans. It's a magical place. And I just really wanted to set it back in my hometown. They tell writers to write what you know. So that was kind of what I know. And it has such an amazing part in my heart still. I still call Woodna home. I'm actually going back to Woodna in a few weeks to do a library event. So, you know, I suppose I just kind of think, you know, without that upbringing in the country and, you know, growing up on a farm and those sorts of things, to go from there to, you know, be living in Adelaide and being an author, it's quite a journey.
Yeah, fantastic. And Joel, I think your familiarity with the area really shone through in this story. You made me feel like I was there. I was walking the beach and I was smelling the ocean breeze. It was so visceral, even more than the strong sense of place, I think, with the characters that you populated the pages of this novel with, people from Erin's childhood, amongst others. I wanted to ask you, how important were these secondary characters to the story, do you think?
As much as it was very character-driven for Erin and Tom and obviously Carter and Hannah, you know, these secondary characters bring the page to life. You know, they're the characters who are there in the community. They're the people that bring the community together. They're the stalwarts of the community. They're people that everyone in the community knows and loves or talks about. But they also have their own little quirks as well. And because they're going to be four, you know, Point Perry books as well, I need to have like a really strong grounding of these sub characters and their importance in this community so that I can actually bring them through in all of the books as well, so that, you know, if a reader picks up any book, they can kind of go, oh, I love Marge from the cafe, or oh yeah, that's Greta, you know, Gossiping Greta, or you know, Aunt Violet, or whatever, Aunt Lilac. So, you know, there's lots of, you know, little quirky characters as well, and they're characters or people that, you know, I kind of remember from growing up as well. You'd always know the lady at the bakery, or you always know the person at the post office, or they're kind of, I suppose, characters that we can't, you know, we do come to expect in small town as well. And because it, you know, it is a small town romance, that's what the readers want. They want that real small town vibe and all the little dramas and things that go on, you know, under the surface of the main story as well, because that becomes a story in itself.
Yes, and fodder for subsequent stories.
Yes, exactly.
Wonderful. Now, Erin is such a broken woman when we meet her. As you said, she's come home to Point Perry to kind of lick her wounds, and she's not really prepared for what's waiting for her there. So I wonder, Jo, was it easy or hard? Was it even painful, would you say, for you to get inside Erin's head?
For me, it was easy. I mean, the very first early drafts of this were me kind of just vomiting all of the hurt and the grief and the heartache of grief that I had with my mum. So, you know, those words never obviously made it into the book. So I found it, you know, I was able to really put myself in her shoes and kind of ask myself, you know, how would I feel, you know, with this happening and with that happening? And, you know, and I suppose, you know, we ask ourselves a lot of, you know, what if this happened, and then how would I feel? And because I was really trying to tap into her emotions, a lot of it was, how would she feel if this happened, or how would she feel if that, and you know, how did she feel when he said that to her? So there was a lot of, you know, coming backwards and forwards. But it, you know, for me, writing her character was initially quite easy, because she was obviously very grief stricken in that first part. But as you know, as she transitions through and she grows as a character and she goes through her ebbs and flows and she comes out the other end in a much better place as well, it was just, for me, you know, once again, I was able to put myself into her shoes, because that's the journey that I went through. You know, once I got over those initial, you know, dark periods and I found my community and I was able to release a lot of the grief from my head, I became a happier person as well. So I was kind of able to match her journey with the journey that I went through coming out of my grief as well. It was definitely emotional to write, and you know, I know a lot of readers have felt that emotion. You know, the amount of people saying, "You know, I had to, you know, feel so many tissues," and you know, I laughed and I cried, and I said, "Well, that's how, when I wrote it." So I laughed and I cried when I wrote it. So she was definitely, you know, an easy character to write, and she was a character that was always in my head, and her story was always there that I could see in my head as well.
I think it's hard to talk about Erin's journey and her experiences in Point Perry without spoilers, but suffice it to say, she and covers a whopper of a secret too, in fact.
Yeah.
I wondered if you were worried that Erin wouldn't be able to cope with so much pain after everything she'd already been through.
Yes. and there were definitely stages of the writing process where I questioned, you know, am I throwing too much at her? Because, you know, we're kind of told, you know, always, you know, up the conflict, up the ante, throw everything at them, you know, throw all the conflict at them and see how it all lands and how they survive. And yes, there were a couple of big whoppers, but I think a part of her journey to come out the other end of her grief was, you know, for her to become a little bit stronger and for her to realise that she wasn't alone anymore. And these, you know, big events that happened or the things that she found out, I think actually helped her process a lot of that, and for her to kind of realise that the reason behind why she was there is because of some of these things that happened in her past as well. So, and once again, you know, I really wanted to touch on, a lot of family have secrets of the past as well. And you know, having that overarching promise of, I want people to come out of it with hope as well. And that if, you know, things in your family history are bad or you've had secrets, you know, there's always hope at the other end as well. You know, I kind of learned along the way that she was strong enough to handle those big events. At the time, you know, she had a lot of people around her that, you know, she had that whole big room of people there that were there to support her through, you know, some of those biggest moments of secrets that came out as well. So she didn't have to deal with them alone, which is why I gave them to her, because I knew that she could, through her new community that she'd be able to establish in Point Pirie, that she, you know, she'd be able to deal with that and move forward.
So tell me about your inspiration for Tom, because his was an unusual story. But like Erin, he, as you mentioned earlier, he suffered heartbreak in his past, and he's not really looking for love at this point in time. He's got other priorities. Yeah. So tell me about him and how you came to be writing about Tom.
Well, it was funny because Tom was always the secondary character. So this is a dual point of view. So there's, you know, one chapter with Erin, one chapter with Tom, and the first couple of drafts, Tom never had his own chapter. He was very much, you know, it was all coming from Erin, because I suppose I put myself in Erin's shoes and I wanted to tell her story. But then he was kind of knocking at the door saying, hang on a second, I've got a good story as well. Let me tell my story. So then, you know, as the chapters were coming on, I was starting to then write, you know, his perspective as well. And I suppose, you know, being a peninsula, you know, it's a big, you know, once again, you know, communities revolves around normally a sports club. You know, netball, football, which is, once again, you know, growing up, that's what, you know, our community was. It was, you know, netball and football in winter, and then in summer it was, you know, tennis and cricket. So, you know, sports is a huge part of the community. I kind of thought, okay, well, he's, you know, he can have a part of that as well. And obviously, you know, getting teachers, rural teachers and those sorts of things, you know, it's a good storyline. And, you know, he loves his mum, but he has, you know, dramas with his dad. So, you know, it just kind of started flowing, because I needed him to have obviously some conflict as well. And you know, being a single dad, that in itself, I really wanted to explore that as well. You know, how, you know, if you're a single dad, introducing a female, and, you know, to your child, and obviously being in a, once again, in a rural, in a small community, you know, there's gossiping, there's whispers and all those sorts of things. So his character really just evolved a lot slower than what, you know, Erin's did. And I really probably had to do a little bit more research for him into, you know, being a single father, and obviously some of the legalities around, you know, his relationship with Hannah, his ex-wife, and how that would pan out as well, and how she could then link in with all of them. I just wanted him to be a good country bloke, you know, a good country bloke that is well respected in the community. You know, everyone loves him. He's a good footy player, because, you know, we all love the good footy players in the country. And, you know, and that was just, I suppose, you know, essentially what, you know, how I grew up. So that was kind of where his character was sparked.
Jo, given your work as an editor and your experiences in the publishing industry to date, I wondered if you had any tips you could offer for listeners out there who are on this journey to publication now, or thinking about embarking on one.
There are a lot of tips. I think the biggest one that I've learned is to stay in my own lane, like stay with what is true to me, and don't try to do what somebody else is doing if it doesn't feel right, or if it's not being productive. Particularly in the early stages, you know, I tried the whole, you know, sitting at my desk between, you know, 6 and 7, writing 2,000 words a day, or trying to write 2,000 words a day, and that didn't work. You know, I've tried so many things to be like, you know, my favorite authors, and, you know, read about, you know, how you can be more productive or whatever. And it wasn't really until I did the Fremantle Romance Writers of Australia conference, we did the Gallup strengths, which is where we actually, you know, we looked at what our strengths were. And I pretty much from that walked away knowing that my brain isn't wired for me to sit down and smash out 2,000 words at 7 o'clock every morning. That's not how my brain is wired. And once I realized that, you know, I kind of knew that, you know, my brain is actually wired for me to be a deep thinker and a deep processor. So for me, I then that gave me permission to then, you know, not actually sit down and try to smash out X amount of words per day, because that's not how my brain works. But for me to actually sit and mull and, you know, scribble things down, and then when I'll have the story ready, then sit down and write it. So that is what my process is, and that's what works for me. And it took me a long time. It took me actually 7 years to work that out as well. And I think, you know, as aspiring writers, we look everywhere for the easy answer, for the quick answer, for what works and what, you know, what somebody else is doing. And yes, absolutely try them all, but I think we can get too caught up in what somebody else is doing and not actually stopping to look at actually how we work best as well. So I suppose that's, you know, something that has been a bit of a aha moment for me as well. Other tips are, you know, don't put too much pressure on yourself. You got to just work at your own speed and stay in your own lane is, you know, for me has really helped me just focus in on actually what I'm doing and what my end goal is without trying to listen to all of the buzz and chatter going on around me and trying to be like somebody else and trying to be somebody who isn't deep down what I know is authentically me. I know that sounds a bit woo-woo, but that's really been what's helped me get, you know, bum on the seat and actually, you know, get the words down.
Yeah, I love that, Jo. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think it's a really important message that everybody, there's not one way that works for everybody in terms of getting words on the page or in just in terms of the way you work. And everybody's got different obligations, different competing demands on their time. So it is absolutely true that not everybody can work the same way. And I think it is just about finding what works for you. Now, you mentioned something and I didn't quite catch it. And I'm wondering that, you know, the listeners might be interested in knowing it too. You mentioned what it was that you learned at the Fremantle RWA conference.
It's with Becca Symes. So she came over from America and she looks at a writing process based on your strengths. It's based on the Gallup. Gallup strengths, I think, is what the actual term is called. She then narrows it down specifically for authors. So you do this quite long survey where they ask you questions about, you know, if this was a situation, would you A or would you B? So all those results then come together. And then you get, at the end of it, it lists, you know, what your top 10 strengths are. So there could be things like, you know, I think mine was empath, intuition, you know, could be things like leadership, but there's a whole, there's about 20 of them, I think. And they actually then rank them. And then from that, Becca goes through and goes, okay, well, if these are your strengths, your top five strengths as an author, this is what you're really good at as an author. And if your bottom strengths are these, are, and she'll say, these are things that you will struggle with as an author. So there was a lot of aha moments because, you know, things that I do struggle with were actually the ones down the bottom. So it was actually good for me to go, okay, well, I actually know why I am actually not good at those. It's actually how my brain's wired and how I think and how I process information. So some people could be, you know, massive planners and that's one of their strengths. And then, you know, we've then got a lot of information around how we can best use that to be really productive as an author. So it was an amazing one-day session. And I know we all came out of it with a lot of, oh, my God, that was amazing. So like I said, it was good for me to come out of that and know that it's okay if I'm not one of those people who sit down, you know, and if, you know, at a certain time and smash out 1,000 words, because I actually feel physically ill at the thought of having to do that. So I actually know why now. So I just lean into that. I lean into the fact that I can't just sit down and write words, but I can actually lean into the fact that I am a deep thinker and I process things and I mull over things and I get things right in my head and then I'm able to actually sit down and write a scene. So it might mean that I don't write every day. I might only write every 2 or 3 days, just on the weekend, because I spend the week thinking about something and then I get to the weekend and go, okay, I'm ready to write that down now. So it was a really good session. Her name is Becca Symes and she was amazing, and she has a lot of books and all sorts of things as well for authors. So if you're aspiring author, she's someone to pop onto your list of people to Google.
Jo, I was delighted to hear that you're planning more books to be set in Point Perry, but I'm not going to ask you when they're going to come out.
No pressure.
No pressure. But if listeners wanted to connect with you or learn more about you and your books, where can they find you?
I can actually tell you a little bit about what the books are, if that's okay, because I can tell you when some are coming. I'm currently working on a Christmas novella, which is called Light Up My Heart in Point Perry, which I was hoping to get out by this Christmas, but it might be Christmas in July the way it's going, but that's okay. And I was thrilled to be invited to submit a short story for a Christmas anthology for next year, a fantastic Australian authors. And I've decided to give Hannah her happy ending. So she's obviously a little bit of a villain in Second Chance Love in Point Perry. So, and because the short stories are set over in America, which is obviously where Hannah lives, so she's going to be getting her happy ever after in the short story. I am currently working on book two, which for people who have read it or about to read, it's Lindy's story. Well, she is Erin's best friend that she reconnects with in Point Perry. So, and there'll be two more Point Perry books after that as well. I've got, you know, rough ideas of what the stories and the themes will be as well. But obviously I'm not telling you when they're coming out because I don't know and I don't want the pressure of telling you when they come. But they are coming. I'm working on them and they will be there when they're there. But definitely like the Christmas novella, I was hoping to get it by this Christmas as well. So there's still time. There's still another month.
Yeah.
And your answer to the other question is people can find me. Obviously, I'm on all the socials. I've just joined TikTok. So if you're on TikTok, come on over and say hi. But I'm on all the socials. I tend to hang out mostly on Instagram. And you can obviously sign up for my newsletter as well, just on my website.
Fantastic. And if people wanted to buy your book, where's the best place for them to find it?
Obviously, it's a digital book, so it's available across all of the places where you download your books on e-readers. So it's on Amazon, obviously Amazon America as well for all of your listeners in America, through Apple, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Google Play. So you can pretty much download it on whatever you read your books on as well. And I've also excitedly just learned that the libraries, I know definitely in South Australia, I'm not quite sure anywhere else in Australia, but the libraries have been able to purchase large print paperback copies of my book. Which fabulous. Is very exciting. So yeah, so it's a large print, not for sale. Well, they are for sale, but they're about $60. So, you know, if you're desperate, absolutely buy one. Yeah, so it's available in the library system, obviously on the Libby app as well, if you get your books through the library, or you can request a copy, a large print copy if you need the paperback one as well.
Yeah, just want to reiterate how delighted I am by your publishing success. And I can't wait to read the next Point Perry story. Thank you so very much for joining me today on Talking Aussie Books.
Thank you, Claudine. And I really appreciate your support as well. Like I said, I met you, a little while ago now in a writing group, and you've just been amazing support. So thank you as well.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading!